Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in on a Wednesday afternoon. On an afternoon, a sad day for many of us, I just heard the news that a former professor of mine at Boston University, Howard Zinn, author of The People's History of the United States, which sold millions of copies, has passed away. This is news that I just heard as I was starting up the show. And so I don't have any details yet, but I'll make those available to you later on. We'll also hear an excerpt from some comments made by Professor Zinn that we have on CD down here at KDBS. This afternoon on KDBS, we are celebrating the Third Eye Theater Festival with a number of the playwrights and actors and directors who you will get to see on this particular show as it fast approaches. What's the first date of performance?
Tonight.
Really fast. So we're going to hear from a bunch of these performers who are crowded down into an insufficient number of chairs in 14 Lower Freeborn. We're going to talk about this particular show, a triumvirate of shows, and give you a great number of reasons to check that out here on the UC Davis campus. And then, towards the end of the hour, in addition to hearing about and from the late Howard Zinn, we will hear from Doreen Jeanette. She is a local poet and faculty member over at the Sacramento Poetry Center. Starting tomorrow evening, she's starting a series of workshops for people who want to see their poems in print. If you want to find out more, you can point your browser at the website for the Sacramento Poetry Center, which is sacramentopoetrycenter.org. All of that and the sort of jazz bumper music that you've come to expect when you tune in on a Wednesday afternoon to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back. welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Quick program note, a week from tonight, you'll get to see Poetry Night at Bistro 33 at a new time, starting at 8 p.m. Poetry Night at Bistro 33 will feature next Wednesday two poets from the Sacramento area. One is Tim Call, who's the vice president of the Sacramento Poetry Center, and he is the author of a brand new book. And the other is Robert Grossklaus. Robert's been on the show a couple times. He runs a press out of Roseville, and they will both be featured readers a week from tonight, February 3rd, at Poetry Night at Bistro 33, at a new time, 8 o'clock. If you're looking for something to do to provide some cultural stimulation between now and then, well, then you've come to the right place, because we're going to let you know all about the Third Eye Theater Festival. Is it a theater festival?
Yeah. What?
Yes. Evidently, it's a theater festival, and I've got multiple members representing this festival here this afternoon. I'm going to introduce you all to them, and then we're going to talk to them in order of which play comes up first. I'm just going to pass the mic around, and I'll have each of you just say what your name is, and why don't you just tell us first your UC Davis affiliation, and then we'll go to individuals as necessary. So, Jazz, let's start with you.
Hi, my name is Jazz Trice. I'm the playwright of Empty All the Boxes. I'm also acting in Empty All the Boxes. I'm a fourth-year dramatic art and psychology double major. And that's
great. Where are you from, Jazz?
I'm from Temecula, California.
Excellent. Welcome to the show. Hi.
I'm Tasha Cook, and I'm the director of Empty All the Boxes. I'm a film studies and dramatic arts double major. And I'm from Napa, California.
All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Hi. I'm Daniel Jordan, and I'm the writer of Blue Jay Song, and I'm also acting in the Blue Jay Song. And I am from Roseville, California.
Excellent. Welcome. Hello.
Hi, I'm Olufemilayo Olabi. I'm a dramatic arts major in design, double major. I'm from Oakland, California, and I'm the director of Fools Afloat.
Great. Welcome. Hi.
Hi, I'm Bill McInnes. I'm the director of the Blue Jay Song. I'm a fourth-year UC Davis student majoring in dramatic arts.
And where are you from?
I'm from San Francisco.
All right. Welcome to the show.
Hey, my name is Christopher Ide, and I'm the writer of Fools Afloat, and I'm also acting in Empty All the Boxes. And here at UC Davis, I'm in my final year, and I'm a comparative literature major and drama minor.
Excellent.
Originally from Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo, New York. I've seen some theater in Buffalo, New York. I bet that's surprising to you. welcome to all of you. I am I'm here to let folks at home know that for a number of years, I'd say maybe at least 5, 6, maybe 7 years, we've had playwrights and actors and directors representing the Third Eye Theater Festival join us down here at 14 Lower Freeborn to talk about the different ways that this theater festival is in some ways like KDBS, your campus and community radio station, in that it is student-conceived, student-run, and chances are if you're a student at UC Davis, you or one of your friends know someone who's associated with this great festival. It's a great reason to come out and support your peers, I think, who are really at the forefront of undergraduate creativity here at UC Davis. We're going to talk about their plays in the order in which they're presented. And I think, Bill, that means that we start with you. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Tell us again your affiliation with regard to Third Eye.
I'm the director of the Blue Jay Song, written by Dan Jordan, who's right next to me.
Hi.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Bill. And so, Dan, let me ask you first, what was the inspiration for this play, Blue Jay Song?
Blue Jay Song was basically a big write-up of, I had journals since I was in high school and just different things adding on.
Mm-hmm.
And then before I came to Davis, I was kind of in this relationship that was kind of like this beautiful mess in a way that just made me go crazy in every which way. And then in the end, I was feeling like three different people. Because in my play, the main character is played by three actors on stage at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically how I state it is who I am, who I want to be, and who I should be. And it was just my insane mess of everything I've gone through.
So, to a certain extent, you were either dramatizing your own neuroses or perhaps your own schizophrenia.
Yes.
Yes.
In general. And it's weird because I even, like, I would, into the female character, a little bit of that, into the mother, like, different parts of me would go into different characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I even found myself being, like, more like, oh my gosh, how much more can I spread myself out in it?
Right. Yeah, I wear a lot of hats myself, so I'm familiar with that phenomenon, but haven't yet tried to represent it dramatically. And tell me about the process of submitting to the Third Eye Theater Festival. Did you always know that you wanted to submit a play?
Well, I'm a transfer student, so I didn't really know it existed.
Right.
When I came, when I entered, because we all, at least this year, the three of us writers took a class together, and it was the Granada Artists that year, which the cool part about UC Davis is we have traveling, like, different professors, professionals that come in, and this year it was a playwright in the fall, and we all took his class, and he just, like, different parts, he told me to write this, this, he's like, oh, I like this, go here, and in the end, he's like, you should consider it. And
right.
I considered it and sent it in.
Excellent. It's wonderful when a good class makes a big difference like that, isn't it? All right, great. And so let's hear some more from the director. Bill, do you want to say anything about directing this play?
Yeah, I guess last fall, Dan, Jazz found me and told me to be a director for the festival, and then Dan tracked me down later and really wanted me to direct his play. And I read it, and it definitely is a lot of madness the first time you read through it. So going through it, we definitely tried to work on making sense of the madness and putting into a story that when people leave, they can get part of the lesson that the main character learns and maybe relate to some of the things in life that we have to deal with.
That's great. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're talking about the Third Eye Theater Festival, which starts tonight. Where do they go to see this?
Wyatt Pavilion.
Wyatt Pavilion on the UC Davis campus. If you Google theater and dance at UC Davis, you'll find it as well. Have you done any film work, Bill?
I've done a little bit. I produced a little bit of film in the show that we're doing. So that's been a good experience, a big learning experience for me. I worked with Christian Salvador as my editor, and me and him were up pretty late a lot of nights doing editing, and it came out pretty well. I'm happy with it.
Excellent. And so we'll see that as part of the play?
Yes.
Excellent. And did I see you as a leading part in a silent film, maybe one directed by Randall Wilson?
Maybe someday.
Yeah. All right. Great. And so the name again of that play is The Blue Jay Song. And I should ask you, Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that we don't have blue jays out here in California? You know, it's like an East Coast phenomenon.
Can I tell you a horrible story about
that? You want to say something about that?
Okay. So I feel like UC Davis is going to drop me out of their school as soon as they say this. So in high school, there was a monologue that I had to do in one of my classes that I completely forgot about.
Yeah.
So on the way to the stage, I see a blue bird. I walk past my friend named Jay. And then someone was, because the beginning of the monologue was about church and things, and I literally, on stage, just put all that together, and I'm like, I'm doing a monologue from the Blue Jay song by Greg Monger, who's the dad of the show, because I passed my friend Greg.
Yeah.
And I just remembered, like, I made the monologue on the spot, and then I just went to play because I thought it was kind of funny. And
excellent. So it has, like, improvisational roots.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think they'll throw you out for that.
Okay, good.
I'm pretty sure they won't. All right, great. Well, welcome to the both of you, and I hope the show comes off as you hope it does tonight. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to hear from two more of our theatrically inspired performers, writers, and directors. You're listening to Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. We'll be right back after this important message from our sponsor.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
Back with Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. I'd like to remind you all that this is just one of 10 public affairs programs that you can hear Monday through Friday on KDVS. Shows such as It's About You, starring Franz, who just celebrated a birthday, I think just yesterday. She'll be sad about the passing of the great thinker, writer, and professor, including a professor of mine, Howard Zinn, who's been on Franz's show many times. If you have a chance, you should listen to her show this coming Monday morning from 8:30 to 9:30. Perhaps share with her your condolences as well as a belated birthday wish. But now we're going to talk more about theater. The next play that we're celebrating is called Fools Afloat, and we have both the director and the author of Fools Afloat here in the studio, and I'd like to reintroduce them to you. And let's start with the author of this play, Chris Ide. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks.
And so what inspired Fools Afloat?
Well, Dr. Andy, sometimes the biggest inspirations come out of painful experiences, and unfortunately, back in the spring of 2008, while I was here at Davis, my father passed away quite suddenly.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And yeah, it was really tough, and it's continuing to be tough. But you know, for those of your listeners who have lost someone that they really care about, they understand that. I would hope they understand that you have a couple of choices. You could either despair about how difficult it is, or you can turn back towards the good things in your life and re-embrace what is important to you and who is important to you in your life.
We were talking about theater in Buffalo, and it was actually my brother and I were with my late father in Buffalo to watch him direct a play. When we were there so many years ago. And I know what you mean about something like that continuing to be tough, and it's a challenge to figure out, well, what important and sustaining lessons can we gain from someone after they're no longer with us. And so these sorts of concerns and feelings help to inspire Fools Afloat. Tell me a little bit about the transition from page to stage.
Well, that was a big learning experience. You know, when you're sitting at home in your room writing on your computer or by hand or whatever, you know, as a writer, you have an image in your head of what it could look like on stage. But myself, I haven't ever actually staged a play. This is the first time I've tried to write one. So there were a lot of technical considerations that I didn't necessarily take into account that became considerable challenges to overcome in that staging. And it became a collaborative effort between myself and the director and the designers to come up with solutions. And I had to be willing to make cuts to the script and change the actual story in order to make those things work.
Well, let's talk to one of the people who came to your rescue during this transitional time period. And her name is Olu Fumilayo Alabi. And she's the director of Fools Afloat. Welcome. And is this what sort of directing experience did you have before this show?
I have, I'm going to say zero directing experience, but I can say versus from being on stage, I feel like I direct people, and I've also taken the class, and so it's just a way of going, you know, life is learned and stuff with directing, and yeah. I don't know how I like to like say it perfectly, but I just feel like, you know, their parents are directors, though they may not know it. So,
right.
You know.
Excellent. And in terms of your vision for the show, did you find yourself in friction or opposition at times with the play that you were working with? Or was there some easy overlap at times between your source material and your vision?
I feel that there was never an easy, never. Nothing is easy in life, I feel like, anyway. But it was all a learning experience, and I had to find a way of working and collaborating with the writer and the designers and trying to have a fixed look for the Fools Afloat and trying to please everyone. And that was pretty hard to do. It wasn't easy at all. And learning from deadlines and working with people is kind of also hard as well.
Absolutely. it's a necessary evil, I would say, having to work with people. But let me ask you this. What about, what was a particular element of the play that people might see tonight on stage at the Wyatt Pavilion? What was an element of that play that you found particularly rewarding in terms of either its content or the themes that you were trying to communicate?
looking at the writer, I found two areas of the play, actually. There's a comedic moment in the middle of the play, which Hitler and Hemingway comes and visits one of the main characters in his dream, and I find that part of the play being very funny and interesting to work with. And I found it fun to work with having, because we look at Hitler as like this evil spawn, like as it says in the play. And I tried to have Hitler be the angel, actually, you know, and have Hemingway be something totally different, you know, as what we look at them as. And so, yeah, that's one of them. And the other part is the father-son moment. I connected to that moment because I'm also not close to my own father.
Mm-hmm.
And so that one moment when they finally sit with each other and talk and reminisce, because the father goes in and out from memory. He doesn't remember who his son is. And he just keeps bringing up like, oh yeah, my son, but he's talking to his son and he doesn't know who he is. But then one moment he will remember who he is. I'm like, oh, Paul, but wait, who are you again? And it's just like, I will never want to have that situation happen with me, my father, though I don't see him as much. And I think it's very interesting how I'm talking about this, because in class today in acting, I had this ring here, and it was given to me from my father, and I just realized how precious this ring is to me now. If I ever was to lose my father, I hope to not ever lose this ring.
Yeah.
And it was just also something in the play that he found in this magazine that was sent to him
from his father. It was an old Hemingway story in it from 1952, The Old Man and the Sea, and I actually like read about that, and I just thought it was something very precious. And he also said in the play, Paul, the main character, that it was priceless, and I feel that he was also referring to his girlfriend that he was going to propose to, that she was also priceless, and he doesn't want to lose her.
Right.
Because life is lost to those who don't appreciate it. Which is then another play in Third Eye, and I will never forget that line.
That's good. Even if you're stealing someone else's line, that's a good sentiment. And it was actually The Old Man and the Sea that compelled the Nobel Committee to award the Nobel Prize for Literature to Ernest Hemingway.
Right.
He had written a great number of novels for which he was more famous, but none of them had that kind of uplifting sentiment that the Nobel Committee wanted to see. And so it was a very important novel for Hemingway, one of his last novels or novellas. And it's also one that you can share with school kids in the way that you can't with a lot of Hemingway.
Mm.
So as a result, it's more widely consumed by youngsters. And therefore, a story that many people think of when they think of Hemingway.
Mm.
This is Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis. We've given you little samples of two plays. The first called Blue Jay's Song. The second called Fools Afloat. In a moment, we're going to hear from a couple folks representing our third and final play to be discussed this afternoon called Empty All the Boxes. So stick around for that. And in the last half hour of the show, we'll also have a remembrance of Howard Zinn, who passed away today, as well as a check-in from the Davis poet, Doreen Jeanette, here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
All that you need is a ticket. Come on, big boy. 10 cents a dance.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. There's some great music coming up after this particular radio program, so make sure that you stick around for a radio show that starts at 6 o'clock called Time to Get Away with DJ Springy. This particular winter, we're celebrating the Third Eye Theater Festival. Three different plays, all written, starring, and directed by undergraduates at the University of California, Davis. It's one example, along with KDVS, the California Aggie, and a great number of other student-run programs, projects, and initiatives. Maybe the UC Davis Aggie Marching Banda would be another example, where the undergraduates are doing it for themselves and doing a great job of these different projects as well. I feel it's important that I do my part as a member of the UC Davis community to support these folks in their efforts. You might feel the same way if you remember where we see these shows. And so Jazz and Tasha are here. I'll ask you all to reintroduce yourselves and then tell us, where do we see the Third Eye Theater Festival plays?
Hi, yes, I'm Jazz Trice, the writer of Empty All the Boxes.
And I'm Tasha Cook. I'm the director of Empty All the Boxes. And you can see the show starting tonight at Wyatt Pavilion. And it runs through Sunday. It's Wednesday through Saturday, 8 p.m. and Sunday, 2 p.m. for a matinee.
Great. So it runs from now until Sunday.
Yes.
And the show starts at 8. Mm-hmm. And the matinee on Sunday is 2 p.m.
Yes.
Excellent. And Wyatt Pavilion, for people who don't know, there are a lot of listeners who are listening in Midtown Sacramento or driving down I-80. They may not know the campus as we do. How would you tell them to get to Wyatt Pavilion? Who wants it?
Wyatt Pavilion is a theater that is located behind the main theater building, Wright Hall. And if you're driving by it, it might look like an old barn because it was at a time. And it is a three-quarter thrust stage with audience around three-quarters of the stage. And it has different levels. There's an upper level, and there's a VOM that goes around, sort of like a moat where actors can walk around. And it's really great for a lot of different types of theater and being able to use a different space. It's not like a proscenium arch and where you have limited area. So it's really good and requires a lot of creativity from directors and actors.
Yeah, and it's off of Old Davis Road,
mm-hmm.
which is near the Mondavi, is the best way to describe it.
So if you drive east from Mondavi Center, soon you'll come across a parking lot on your right.
Yes.
So make a right, and you can park there, and that will put you very close to the Wyatt Pavilion Theater. So, great. Who's going to tell us something first about Empty All the Boxes?
Yes, I can speak about my inspiration for the play.
Great.
I took the class, the writing class with Chris and Dan. It was taught by Philip Katanda in the fall of 2008. Yes, that was the year. Mm-hmm. And a couple months before I took the class, my grandfather passed away. And when I was at the funeral, I suddenly realized that I had so much that I wanted to say. And it was this realization that no matter what I said, I felt like I couldn't be heard. And I started asking myself all these existential questions about life and death and love and happiness. And the story started from there. I wanted to tell the story about a disconnected family, a family that, dealt with this death a while ago. And I guess everyone goes through a mourning stage, and this is sort of when they're away from that and back to normal life. And sort of trying to come to the understanding that this feeling of appreciating everyone around you does go away, and sort of slowly learning that it's really important to keep this feeling instead of having it come in waves and something happens. And it starts with the main character having a visit from his grandfather in a dream, and it sort of sets him on this path of becoming a better person and learning to appreciate those around him and confronting issues that he has with his parents and his sister.
Excellent. And I'll ask you the question I was asking earlier. The vision you had for the play, and the vision as it was realized on stage, what are some, what comment do you have about either the process or the final product?
I know in the writing process, I had no intention of it actually being performed.
Yeah.
It was just something for me to let out frustrations and deal with some issues that I was going through. And I didn't envision it being performed in Wyatt in the stage. And on a whim, I submitted it, and it got picked. And then I started realizing, yes, people are going to see this, and now this is something that I have to think about and put more effort into it. It's not just a story. Because to me, it was written more as a story and less of a play. And so I had to learn how to adapt it to become something that was more theatrical instead of something that was more suited for, I guess I'd say, television or something along the lines of that.
That makes sense. Well, let's hear from you, Tasha. Had you directed anything before you directed Empty All the Boxes?
Nope. This is my first time ever directing a theater piece. Uh-huh. I had done film before, but it's a totally different medium. And I had taken the directing series, but this is my first time kind of on my own to speak or say.
And what were some of the joys and challenges of this process?
Probably, like, the challenges were sometimes I would see something and be like, okay, that's totally wrong, but I had no idea how to fix it. But we had a great little crew set up and became like a family. I had an assistant director that really helped me out a lot, and the stage managers and the actors were great with the process. And I think the joys of making this is when I first read the play, I could, even though I never had, like, the nuclear family setup as this play has, I could depict my family within it, and it was really great to see how to work that.
So there were dynamics that were familiar to you that you got to call upon from your own familial experience.
Some were familiar, and some were the exact opposite. Like, Jamie has kind of a tough relationship with his father, and my dad is, like, probably one of my best friends. Like, we have this great relationship, but my mother and I, we have a really bad relationship, so I could kind of see that from there.
Okay. And good. And so if you, and speaking now of all three plays, Tasha, I'll put you on the spot. What would be some reasons that people should come out tonight, maybe if they don't have any connections to, say, undergraduates at UC Davis?
I think, well, maybe appreciating the process that this isn't like a professional show. This is all student run, like you said before. This is student designers, student directors, and student writers. And we've really put everything in this show. Like, we've, you know, this quarter and last quarter, we probably, you know, didn't spend as much time in our classes as we should have because we were spending so much time on this project. So we really gave it our all.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And remind us again, the first chance to see the show is tonight. And
tonight at
what about thereafter?
And you can see it Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m. in Wyatt Pavilion or Sunday the matinee at 2 p.m.
All right. Well, congratulations to all of you. It's quite an accomplishment to have made it thus far, and before you know it, within hours, some of you are going to be on stage, some of you are going to be biting your fingernails off stage, but all of you will finally launch this great experiment that you've been working on for a good long time. I hope it's very successful for you. Anyone have any parting words, phrases, or advice?
I guess, like, what Fumi said earlier, a quote that was taken from the play that I wrote, Empty All the Boxes, life is lost to those who don't appreciate it. There was a common theme and a centrality that was found between all three plays that were not intentional, but there's just learning to connect to people that you have while they're here is, I guess, I would say the main theme that all these plays share, and it's really important for people to understand that and be a great message for people to take away from it.
Absolutely. An important message indeed, and one that all of you can explore, contemplate, and see lived out on the stage tonight, starting at 8 o'clock at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater on the UC Davis campus here in the city of Davis, California. Thanks to all of you, and good luck tonight. Break a leg.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Andy.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a couple minutes with a remembrance of the late Howard Zinn here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. I'd like to take a moment to share sad news that I mentioned before, and that is the late great professor, thinker, activist, and author, Howard Zinn, has passed away. Howard Zinn was a professor of mine at Boston University in the late 1980s. He's died at the age of 87 in California. He was an author, a teacher, a political activist whose leftist book, A People's History of the United States, became a million-selling alternative to mainstream texts and a favorite of such celebrities as Bruce Springsteen and Ben Affleck. He died today at the age of 87, having suffered a heart attack in Santa Monica, California, his daughter said. The historian was a resident of Auburndale, Massachusetts, and I knew him when I was a student of his at Boston University. Speaking of leftists, texts, and an alternative to the mainstream, he took part in a show called Howard Zinn, Stories Hollywood Never Tells. And I thought I'd share one of those stories with you this evening. It is called Saying No to War. The next voice that you hear will be that of Howard Zinn.
War needs to be presented on film in such a way as to create a new population of people who will simply say no to war. We need to see that more and more. Need a film about the those heroic Americans who protested against World War One, they were socialists, they were pacifists. They're just people who saw the stupidity of the war that was taking the lives of 10 million people in Europe and which now the United States was entering. We look for people who can be really interesting characters in films. And you look at some of the people who at that important point during World War One opposed the war. You see Emma Goldman, the feminist anarchist, who goes to prison for opposing the draft and the war. You see Helen Keller. I haven't seen Helen Keller in any film other than the kind of film that extols the fact that she was a disabled person and she became an important person. But I've never seen a film in which Helen Keller is presented as what she was, a radical, a socialist, an anti-war agitator, somebody who would refuse to cross a picket line which was set up against a play which was about her. A remarkable subject for a film. Or I think of Kate Richards O'Hare, the socialist who was put in jail for opposing World War One, and that great scene in the prison where they're stifling for lack of air, and she takes a book that she's been reading and reaches through the bars and hurls the book through the skylight above the prison corridor and lets the air in. And all the prisoners applaud and cheer because finally they're getting some fresh air. I could say a lot more about possible stories and scenarios about war, about World War II. Again, a good war, right? The best of wars, but not that simple. And that's why Studs Terkel, when he did his oral history called A Good War, he put quotation marks around good war, if you notice. Because of the war, yes, humanitarian sympathies and fighting against a terrible evil, fascism, and on the other hand, a war marked by our own atrocities that multiplied as the war went on, culminating in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I have not seen a film that dealt with our bombing of Hiroshima. I mean, the closest that we come to a film which deals with our bombing of civilian population is Kurt Vonnegut's book, the film that was made about Slaughterhouse 5. But that was an oddity, a rarity. By the way, about World War I, although I have to acknowledge the rare films that were made that were anti-war, and All Quiet on the Western Front is an example of an absolutely extraordinary film. Recently, I compared, in some article I wrote about Saving Private Ryan, I compared Saving Private Ryan to All Quiet on the Western Front, about what I thought was the essential glorification of war, despite the mayhem in Saving Private Ryan, and a very absolutely diamond-clear anti-war expression of All Quiet on the Western Front. And then there are all these issues connected with class.
I think we're going to leave it there for Howard Zinn. If you want to find out more about Howard Zinn, the great author, activist, and thinker, I invite you to visit his website, which is howardzinn.org. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're going to be joined in a moment by Doreen Jeanette here on KDVS. Welcome back, folks, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I wanted to remind you that at 6 o'clock, there'll be a radio show coming on called Time to Get Away with DJ Springy. I bet you want to see that. Well, Doreen Jeanette is my guest, and she is someone with an impressive list of publications under her belt. This will be especially relevant for the conversation we're about to have. Starting with her poetry collection, Urchin to Follow, which is forthcoming from the National Poetry Review Press in May of this year. I believe, if I remember correctly, because she won a huge prize from the National Poetry Review. She can confirm that in a moment when I turn up her microphone. Her poems, essays, and reviews have appeared in journals such as Puerto del Sol, The Journal, Ninth Letter, Coconut, Court Green, Memorias, and the Georgia Review. Originally from Seattle, Doreen Jeanette has her MFA from New Mexico State University and her PhD from the University of Georgia. She lives here in Davis with her husband. And if you want to find out more, you can visit her website, Doreen Jeanette, JeanetteJeanette.com. I've invited her on this show because she's doing something pretty fun tomorrow night, and I wanted her to have a chance to tell you all about it. Doreen Jeanette, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hi, thanks for inviting me back to the show.
Absolutely. Well, you and I have had conversations about the challenges of not only writing poetry, which is a brave and audacious enough thing to do, I think, but then sending it out to strangers and sometimes people who are less strange to see if they would consider publishing one's work. But for many, this process is so daunting that they barely get started, and sometimes they are disquieted and put off by that first rejection. And I'm wondering if there's any help out there for such people.
Indeed, and I'm so glad that you bring the subject up that way. I am teaching tomorrow night at the Sacramento Poetry Center space on behalf of an arts organization called Matrix Arts. I'm going to teach a class from 7 to 9 p.m. called Photo in Tutu, Not Required, How to Submit Your Work to Literary Journals. I have had the chance to work for assorted literary journals as an editor, and I want to confirm that all literary editors are strange. You raised that as a question, but we're definitely weird. But I've had the chance to work for Puerto del Sol and Verse and the Georgia Review. And in doing that, I have observed really consistently that writers who haven't had that experience to see what the inside of a magazine's operation looks like really are confused about where to send their work and how to send their work, and it ends up just being a huge source of anxiety. And it's really not all that complicated. That's what I'm going to spend some time doing. We'll talk about how editors make their decisions about what to publish. I'm going to share some template cover letters with people. We'll talk about how to write an author bio that's professional, even if you don't have any publications yet. Sometimes that's a real sticking point for folks.
Right.
So we're just really looking for anxiety reduction so you can go back to worrying about the creative writing itself, which is actually difficult, and not waste your energy on the silly secretarial stuff. That's my point.
That is a good point. So a mix of therapy along with some sound advice.
Absolutely. Sound practical advice and lots of templates you can take away with you and then just fill in your blanks and move on to doing something creative and more interesting.
Excellent. Now, just so I understand, the title of your workshop is Everyone Who Comes to the Sacramento Poetry Center Tomorrow, January 28th at 7 p.m., and that's on 25th Street in Sacramento.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Are they all required to bring photos of themselves in tutus?
They are not, but that example comes from a submission that I was lucky enough to be the first person at the Georgia Review to open, in which a writer, a fiction writer, a middle-aged man, by the way, not a long-legged 12-year-old ballerina, had sent this wonderful picture of himself in a tutu. And the picture had nothing to do with the story he was submitting, which was actually pretty good. But it was just, I think, an attempt to sort of stand out, you know, from the pile. People know editors are swamped, and they take on all these kind of crazy tactics to try to get the editor's attention. And as charming as this picture was, it did not do his submission any good. And so that's something we'll be talking about is what to do and what not to do. And that's just a funny example that stuck in my memory, so I'll hopefully be sharing some amusing stories of how to do it and how not to do it, how to send your work out to magazines.
So all sorts of strategies are waiting for people to discover when they attend this workshop tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the Sacramento Poetry Center.
Exactly, and if people would like to look at that with their eyeballs, if they are not auditory learners, I think the easiest way is to stop by my personal website, which is DoreenJeanette.com, DoreenJeanette. I am teaching the class for the Thursday Next series of Matrix Arts, but I know that right this minute they are updating their spring calendar with all of their many Thursday night course offerings, so the information is most readily available right this second, probably at the top of my webpage, DoreenJeanette.com.
That is great to know. Quick question before I let you go. Do you know where I can get red velvet cake?
I know exactly where you can get red velvet cake, and that would be, again, at the Sacramento Poetry Center, but that would be Monday night, February 1st at 7:30, and you would be there to hear two spectacular writers, Lori Ostland and Robin Ekus, both of whom have fresh books out from the University of Georgia Press, for which I happen to edit books. We are going to have a sort of West Coast Georgia Press trifecta of red cake velvet power or something on Monday night, Sacramento Poetry Center, 7:30, and you can hear some wonderful fiction and poetry and have your cake and eat it too.
That's great. Robin Ekus came on this radio show and talked up University of Georgia Press before I think either one of us knew you.
How fun!
I think she had not even planned on the quid pro quo of the red velvet cake later.
Well, see, that's just proximate karma for you. You do a good turn and then someone feeds you cake.
Absolutely. And I'll say in the interest of nepotism that I've known Robin Ekus for about 17 years, and I find her to be a phenomenally talented poet. I'm very excited about her new book called The Mansion of Happiness. And if I were all of you, I would be buying that book. Now, I'm not all of you, so you can make your own decisions. But I'm just, you know, trying to give you all my perspective as one person.
And you can buy The Mansion of Happiness and The Bigness of the World, Lori Ostland's fiction collection, conveniently at the reading Monday night, February 1st, 7:30 Sacramento Poetry Center. You can even have the writer sign it. And I really want to plug, I think we all know that reading one's own creative work is sometimes even more difficult than writing it, but both of these women are super sharp and super funny and really skilled public speakers, so it's really going to be an excellent event.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Doreen, for coming on the show, and I hope a good number of people show up to your workshop at the Sacramento Poetry Center tomorrow night at 7 o'clock to find out more about how to demystify the process of submitting one's poetic works to journals of all sorts.
Great. Thanks for having me on the show. Again, appreciate it. Hope to see some of you there tomorrow night.
I hope so. Take care now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, before I say goodbye to all of you, I want to say this. Sims Medal reminds us that giving blood is a safe, painless procedure that saves lives. In today's world, donors are carefully screened to prevent the transfer of disease, and disposable needles are used to protect the health of the donor. So don't be afraid to give the gift of life. Give blood generously so that others may live. This important message is a courtesy of Sims Medal in Rancho Cordova and in Sacramento. They're on the air because they care about the people in this community. I'd like to thank everyone who appeared on the radio program, most recently Doreen Jeanette, who herself is a great poet, but I didn't want to make her blush while she was on the telephone with me. Also, we heard from Jazz Trice, Tasha Cook, Daniel Jordan, Bill McInnes, Chris Ide, and Olu Funimilayo Alabi, which is a great name. It's rare that you can find a first name with six syllables. Olu Funimilayo, six syllables. You know who's got eight syllables in her name? Isabella Rossellini. That's also a great name. We're at the end of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'd like to thank all those young actors and remind you, and directors and writers, and remind you that you can see them starting tonight at 8 o'clock in less than 2 hours at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater for the Third Eye Theater Festival. Tomorrow night you can see them as well. You can also see Doreen Jeanette. You can see these plays all through the weekend, and then on Monday, Doreen will be introducing Robin Ekus, who's an old friend of Dr. Andy, as well as Lori Ostland, as they read their work at the Sacramento Poetry Center, Monday, February 1st at 7:30. Thanks to all of you for listening this afternoon to KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis. Stick around for some great music, and you know what? I'll be back in a week to talk about more poetry. I think I've got a poet who's going to be on the show named Wendy Barker. That'll be February 3rd. And then also Robert Grossklaus and Tim Call will be appearing that night at 8 o'clock at Bistro 33. as part of Poetry Night at Bistro 33 here in the city of Davis. I thank you for your time this afternoon, and I'll see you all next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology.